All right, today on the Traffic Culture of Chicago podcast series, we have Tong Zhu, Chief Commercial Officer and Chief Strategy Officer at the Northwest Seaport Alliance. So thank you for being here today, Tong. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So let's dive into it. Maybe you could give us a little background on who the Northwest Seaport Alliance is and what you do there.
You bet. I'm happy to do that. The Northwest Seaport Alliance was established back in 2015 as a marine cargo operating partnership between the ports of Seattle and Tacoma, two of the nation's premier port complexes. So think of us as a property management company with a specialty in cargo facilities. We have a diversified cargo portfolio, including containers, break bulk, auto, and bulk cargoes. We're also the primary gateway for trade between Alaska, Hawaii, and the lower 48 states. I think this is a fact that's not as well known in the industry. Northwest Seaport Alliance is unique in my mind in many ways. We operate much like a private business while adhering to the high standard of a public agency. And I don't know if you know this, our CEO reports to the commissions of both ports.
Oh.
While the commission, yeah, so while, so Shihei has 10 bosses.
Wow, that's a lot.
While the commissioners are elected by the citizens of Pierce and King counties, we really see our gateway and our ports as a significant marine highway for the state and beyond, especially for the many, many shippers located in Eastern Washington and in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. We're a landlord port as well as an operating port. In the case of container facilities, we sign long-term leases with private terminal operators like many other ports, who in turn operate our international and domestic container terminals. Now, we also operate one of the largest on-dock terminal intermodal yards in our gateway. In addition to terminals for handling break bulk and ro-ro cargoes. And you might be aware of this, that we are the fourth largest containerized gateway in North America. Mm-hmm. And we have international carrier services, weekly services, connecting us to major ports of calls around the world. We have a little bit short of 20 services weekly. I wanted to remind you and the audience that we are not the other Washington. We are located in the northwest corner of the United States, definitely the better one. we offer shorter transit to and from Asia and are the first and last port of call for many, many Trans-Pacific liner services. Mm-hmm. We are, given our location, we offer short ocean transit time, and I believe we offer a pretty competitive no terminal dwell times and consistent rail services. I believe we are the natural port of choice for container cargo headed to Chicago and other destinations in the Midwest and Ohio Valley.
Sure.
Now, we're proud of ourselves on offering best-in-class customer service. Seaport Alliance staff are very proactive and performance-driven. We work hand-in-hand with importers, exporters, and supply chain partners to find innovative and cost-effective solutions for their cargo.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say that Seaport Alliance, Northwest Seaport Alliance, is all about providing competitive and innovative supply chain solutions to our customers. We take great pride in being the very first Seaport Alliance of its kind in North America, as far as I know, the world, based on the last time I looked at it a few months ago. I know since Hong Kong has established its own Seaport Alliance. That spirit of innovation and competitiveness is very much ingrained in everything we do and in all of us here at Seaport Alliance.
That's great. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some examples of your supply chain solutions or the innovation there at the Alliance.
You bet. You bet. Like many other ports, we continue to add capacity and ready our terminals to be big ship ready. We're also encouraging developments at our terminals to improve the flow of cargo, reduce truck turn time, and expand our on-dock rail capacity. That's one of our key features, is that we have beautiful on-dock rail facilities in the gateway. Mm-hmm. And just to cite a few examples, in Tacoma, we completed berth modernization at Husky Terminal this year with the acquisition of 8 largest gantry cranes on the West Coast. Work continues on the backlands and truck gate complex to increase yard space for efficient truck and rail operations. And that Husky Terminal is based in Tacoma. In Seattle, modernization of Terminal 5 is definitely another key infrastructure project. Public and private parties are investing over $500 million in that terminal, and that's in Seattle. The modernization program began this July of this year. The 185-acre terminal is expected to open in two phases, with one major berth ready to handle international container cargo in the spring of 2021, if everything goes as what we planned. Upon full build-out, Terminal 5 will add approximately 1.3 million TEU of container capacity to our gateway, as well as offering a premier on-dock rail facility for handling discretionary cargo to and from the Midwest. The other significant development in Seattle and in Tacoma is the fact that we're working with Army Corps of Engineers to look at dredging our waterways to 57 feet. In Seattle, we already have obtained the authorization, and we're embarking on that work. This will allow us to load bigger ships calling our gateway to capacity with heavy exports, so that frankly, all of our exporters can maximize their export potential, and not having to worry about weighing out the vessels. The Seattle project is currently undergoing design and funding, and it is my hope in the next 5 years the work and the waterway will be dredged. We have exactly the same target for Tacoma. In fact, we've started the feasibility study of our main waterways, so more to come. But our ultimate goals for both Seattle and Tacoma is to dredge our waterways to 57 feet.
That's great, to be more competitive. You mentioned a lot of the modernization activities that y'all are doing. Maybe you could touch on some of the pieces that I know internally we've talked about a lot with issues and concerns at the ports there. I know you're dealing with truck, rail, shipping containers, so there's always something going on, always a hiccup or change that has to be done or an adaption that needs to be made. So maybe you can touch on some of the things that you've seen over the past year, you're currently seeing, or going into the near future, what you're seeing in terms of issues and concerns.
You bet. So maybe I can, if it's okay, touch on current issues. Some of concerns we have and some of the changes that we're making. Maybe I can touch on those. Yes, and probably true with many other West Coast gateways that our exports this year are down as a result of tariffs, the trade war that we have been our administration launched with many other countries, especially China. And I believe other reasons for our decline in terms of our exports has to do with U.S. dollars, the strength of the U.S. dollar, and other market dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, some of our agricultural exporters are definitely looking, are successful in finding alternative markets to help them ride through this turbulence. And of course, I'm sure you're aware recently that a lot of ocean carriers have announced blank sailings on the Trans-Pacific trade. What that means is blank sailings, in my mind, are a tool to help carriers improve vessel utilization and reduce cost. Basically, when a scheduled vessel gets canceled, containers are rolled to the next vessel or a partner's vessel. We've seen a lot of these blank sailings happening in recent, I guess, six to eight months on the Pacific, on the Trans-Pacific trade, which has reduced the frequency of port calls at our at major gateways. Again, it's not unique to our gateway, but I think all major gateways on the West Coast are experiencing the same thing. This have unfortunately also impact rail services and capacity to and from Chicago. So we're monitoring that very, very closely. And wherever we can, we try to step in and help facilitate transactions of our cargo owners. And of course, there is also the IMO 2020 fuel mandate. I think it's obviously has been in the press the most recent 6 months to a year. This IMO 2020 is scheduled to go into effect January 1st of next year.
Mm-hmm.
The new regulations will increase ocean freight costs by forcing carriers to, not by forcing carriers, by asking carriers to burn more expensive low sulfur fuel oil or install scrubbers or other type of system that essentially remove sulfur particulates from exhaust before it is emitted into the air. It's really a global issue impacting all trade lanes. I think all of us are pleased that our carriers are taking this step to help manage our air quality and help reduce acid rain and respiratory diseases such as asthma. I think they're doing the right thing, and we all should come and support that. I just want to acknowledge, you know, fuel costs already represent more than 50% of total operating expenses for a carrier. The increased cost for carriers to comply with IMO 2020 is huge, is enormously impactful for them. And so it will be difficult for any carrier to absorb and to stay in business. I'm trying to say that it is important that the industry supports a carrier as they implement IMO starting in January. And given today's uncertain global trade environment, and the limited ability for carriers to make profit in today's operating environment, I just want to commend the carriers for their commitment to comply with the new regulations. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, appreciate that. Maybe you can leave us with just some opportunities and development opportunities that you see because you are dealing with carriers and shippers for the carriers and shippers into the future going forward.
Sure. I can maybe mention a few things, changes at the port, and and how do we navigate the current intermodal and port supply chain. So the last several years, we definitely have seen ocean carriers continue to see them consolidating, right? And with new shipping alliances emerged. And today there's fewer, but much bigger carrier alliances and carriers in general. With bigger carriers and bigger ships that come large surge of container volume at one time, this really puts us in a bind in the sense that there's increased pressure on terminals and truck gates to handle these the additional volume. I am extremely proud that our terminals have been adapting to keep operations fluid for truckers and for railroads. They have on their own came up with many operational solutions to accommodate these increased volumes. Some of the examples, there has been, we have extended gate. We also, the Seaport Alliance wanted to respond to the industry and in support of our customers, and we have rolled out, implemented a gate efficiency program to help incentivize terminals to be open at off-peak NIMP times. And I think it has paid dividend that we have seen our gate operations and our gateway in general much more fluid than in the past. I would also acknowledge the local longshore have also stepped up and adding labor to keep up with increased volumes and supporting the additional gate hours. The other thing I wanted to just make a mention that in partnership with our customers, we're also making strategic investments outside of the terminals to support terminal operations. We certainly recognize that there is only so much a terminal operator can do within the terminal footprint, and that there is a need to expand beyond the gate. This is where the innovative spirit comes into play. We are currently exploring various alternatives to help improve terminal and gateway performance. And some of these initiatives really are outside of the terminal gate. Include mainland rail hubs where exporters have traditionally been challenged with equipment and with rail services to ports. We are also seeing strong growth in our transload business, and this trend has been going on for a few years. If I remember correctly, transloading business accounts for almost 33% of our cargo business and is growing. I would venture out to say no other gateway in North America offers a large pool of transload service providers as ours. In other words, through these service providers, we're able to offer importers and exporters many competitive choices. This absolutely helps them mitigate any risk from service disruptions compared to a port with very few transload service providers. We're very strong in this segment. Transload applies for time-sensitive import cargo as well as agricultural dry and refrigerated exports. The other area that I wanted to call out is that we are number one gateway for reefer cargo as far as exports. And when adding imports into that, we're number two in North America. And there's reason for that. I think it has to do in part with the abundance of cold storage facilities we have. And of course, we have a robust reefer exports from through this gateway. I really attribute a lot of our export success to many of the, not only our exporters, but many of the transloading service providers and cold storage services in the region. They are a very important fabric of the supply chain.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we really appreciate it. So Tong, if somebody out here wants to contact you all more about opportunities like that, whether it be transloaders or other business development areas, should they go to your website or how is it best to reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to our website or call John Tallis 24/7 anytime.
Right. Well, Tong Zhu, thank you so much. And thank you to the Northwest Seaport Alliance for taking some time out today. The Traffic Club of Chicago really appreciates your time and you know, this episode. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.